The U.S. was on the sidelines yesterday when Russia, Iran, and Turkey met in Moscow to work out a deal to end the Syrian civil war. Russia and Iran backed the Assad regime. Turkey backed the Syrian rebels, but seems to have made a deal with Russia to give that up if Russia stops backing the Syrian Kurds. Turkey has long been worried about a Kurdish separatist movement. Sound complicated? Well, all of Syrian history is. Syria is a remnant of the Ottoman Empire, which fell at the end of World War I. Over decades, the French and the British split up the region according to their own needs. The French partitioned neighboring Lebanon and favored minority Christians. That created a dangerous imbalance of power. They took modern-day Syria and divided it into separate administrative units, divisions that still simmer today, and built the path to today's civil war. Tensions with the West and a void filled by Vladimir Putin and Russia. John McHugo wrote the book, Syria, A History of the Last 100 Years. He joins us from London. Welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
We will go back in time, this incredibly storied history. It includes occupations by France and Britain. But just briefly, how did modern-day Syria and Russia align?
Well, I'm afraid this was because of a major mistake that the West made. In the 1950s, it was the era of the Cold War. It was also, of course, when the Arab-Israeli conflict was at its height. And basically, the Western powers abandoned Syria. Syria needed arms for its defense. The Western powers refused to sell them. You know the name Hafez al-Assad, who became the dictator of Syria in 1970. Right. Well, he began as an Air Force cadet. And as an Air Force cadet, he visited London for the only time in his life to learn to be trained to fly fighter aircraft. But that all ended. And instead, he spent a year in Russia. And there has been a huge connection between the Syrian military, the Syrian political elite, and trade connections, and also to some extent religious connections. Because let's remember that the largest Christian sect in Syria are the Orthodox, and they have co-religionists in Russia. And the Russians have always seen themselves as the protectors of the Orthodox. Oh. And so when you have all these links, which have been allowed to grow in strength over the decades since the late 1950s, it's no surprise that Russia is closely connected to Syria. The Syrians have felt terribly abandoned by the West because they would really have far preferred to be with the West than with Russia.
Well, you remind us of so many things. First of all, Bashar al-Assad, who is Assad's son, his descendant, who's now ruling the country. The fact that many people think Syria is a Muslim country. It is largely Muslim, but there have always been these pockets of other countries within Syria as the nation state formed. And so let's take us back to how it formed. 400 years of Ottoman rule. In 1918, Arab troops supported by the British captured Damascus. Then post-World War I, the Ottoman Empire, which supported Germany, falls. The Allies divvy up the whole region, and the French take control of what's Syria, Lebanon, for more than two very fraught decades. How did that lead to some of the problems that we're seeing today in Syria?
I think the first thing we have to realize that the boundaries Syria has were largely fixed by the British and the French. And those boundaries were devised to suit Britain and France. The local people, the Syrian people, I mean, it's a very interesting thing, but an Egyptian friend of mine said to me not so long ago, when I see someone on the television and he's speaking the dialect from that part, I cannot tell if he's a Syrian, a Lebanese or a Palestinian very often. And all these people, to some extent, were part of a cultural whole, something that could have become a nation. But the British and the French did not want that to happen. And so, sadly, we partitioned Syria. Now, the partition essentially happened in 1922-23. And since then, Syria, as we know it today, by default, has become a nation state. And now the disaster in Syria today has many fathers, but we should not ignore the role that Britain and France, I'm afraid, played in it.
Well, the French tried to make French the common language. They favored Catholics over Islam. And as we said, this had been a country that was a cobbled together group of communities. William Polk, writing in The Atlantic, described it as little Italies and little Chinatowns that were all throughout the country. But then I want to move you ahead. The Ba'ath Party starts to rise to power. Ba'ath has promoted the ideas, as they did in Iraq, that Syria should be a secular Arab state. Talk about how important this idea is to what we're seeing today.
First of all, with respect to William Polk, I don't think it was quite like that. They weren't cobbled together. They were already there together. And secularism goes back well before the Ba'ath Party. Faisal, who tried to set up a united Syrian state in 1919, said some words in Aleppo on the day that the First World War ended that I think we should really remember, and they aren't well known. He said the following: the Arabs were Arabs before Moses, before Jesus, and before Muhammad. And whoever tries to sow discord between Muslim, Christian, and Jew is not an Arab. I am an Arab before all else. And what the Syrian Arab nationalists were trying to do, well before the Ba'ath Party, was establish a secular state. One of the drafters of the Syrian constitution, Faris el-Khoury, was a Christian. Jews had their own seats in parliament. It is a huge tragedy that religious conflict has gone down, you know, has occurred, because I think it could have been avoided.
And How?
Because the idea was that Arabic would be the common tongue. They were proud of their Arab heritage. And I'm afraid a lot of people didn't want that to happen. If you're a businessman and the merchant elite was disproportionately Sunni Muslim in some places, like the city of Hama, if you find your property is being nationalised, or you find that you can have your own little shop in the souk, but all the big commercial opportunities have been taken away from you because cronies of the Ba'ath Party are taking them, you get angry. And religion, unfortunately, was the only avenue available to them. Now, the Ba'ath Party was thoroughly secular, and this brings us, of course, to Hafez al-Assad. He became the dictator after being head of the Air Force and then Minister of Defence, and he took power in a military coup. Now, he was an Alawi, but if anyone thinks this was some sectarian thing, they should think again, because the man he overthrew was also an Alawi, Salah Jadid. And what happened was that Alawis and other minorities flocked to the Ba'ath Party because of its secular orientation. They wanted universal education. They wanted equal rights for women, something we should remember today, I think. They wanted an end to all involvement of religion in politics. Unfortunately, the Ba'ath Party was also a revolutionary organisation, and it compromised these principles, basically by taking part in military coups. That, after all, is how Hafez al-Assad got to power.
Well, Saddam Hussein in Iraq was also Ba'athist. He also had those same beliefs. Yes, a dictator, but he was for women's rights, more moderation, a secular society. What fundamentally went wrong here? As you say, there was this sort of living together. There was this mandate from Faisal: we're going to be Arabs first before our faith. What happened?
The problem that Saddam Hussein had in Iraq and that Hafez al-Assad had in Syria was basically the same. You come to power by a military coup. You have a narrow power base. How do you win support? The obvious means of doing so is patronage. That means that you give jobs to your cronies, first of all to your family. In the case of Syria, this meant that the president, Hafez al-Assad, and his wife, they tended to recruit people to look after the security services from their own families. They, of course, were all of the same religious sect, the Alawis. And the Alawis became disproportionately strong in the security services and the top brass of the army. In Iraq, it happened the other way around. There, the Sunni Arabs were a minority, but Saddam Hussein and his predecessors came from that minority. So where do you think he chose the Republican Guard from? From the tribes near his hometown, who were all Sunnis. So you had a kind of religious minority taking a disproportionate share of the of control of the country. And in both countries at the same time, they had put democracy into the deep freeze. And that meant that there was no way you could oppose the government. And sadly, this is what led open the door to serious hate-filled religious politics.
And the Arab Spring that we saw, the overthrowing of governments.
Yes, and of course, at the time of the Arab Spring, they hoped for an end to all the sectarianism as well.
John McHugo, author of Syria, A History of the Last 100 Years, also his other book, A Concise History of the Arabs. John, thank you so much.
It's been my pleasure.